The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Because of technology, much of what we do and how we do it has changed dramatically over the past decade. Facebook for socialization, Amazon for shopping, Netflix providing entertainment, and Google retrieving that information we want or need. But beyond being able to give online, not so much in the world of philanthropy has changed. But that may be changing with the introduction of Philanthropy Cloud by Salesforce. And here to tell us about it is Rob Acker, the Chief Executive Officer of Salesforce.org. Good evening, Rob, and welcome to the Business of Giving.
Thank you, Denver. It's an honor to be here.
So tell us a little bit about Salesforce.org and what the mission of the organization is.
Well, the simplest answer is that we were started in 1999 as the foundation. In 2013, we changed to Salesforce.org, and our mission is to improve the state of the world, and we do it in three ways, with technology, as well as investment, which you might call grants, and then the third way is also community, which is we get involved and our employees involved in the community and give back time back into the community.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we get into all that, one of the things that I've always admired about Salesforce is your ability to look at the broader context of what's happening in society and only then create initiatives and products that fit into that landscape. So let's touch upon several of those larger issues first, Rob, if we may. And let's begin with trust. You know, the Edelman Trust Meter indicates that trust is really at historic lows. People have just really lost faith in our bedrock institutions. Speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, I find it ironic. It's really interesting. I think that this is one of the greatest times in human history to be alive. If you look at many measures or in many measures of how we measure progress, it's extraordinary. Like, for instance, extreme poverty. If you were born in 1820, 94% of the world's population lived in extreme poverty. Today, it's just 8%, which means it was a high degree of likelihood you were going to be born into extreme poverty, no matter what your race was, what country you were born in. And so the thing is, but if you look at basic education, literacy, child mortality, vaccination, we have made remarkable progress. Yet at the same time, like, none of us feel that way. We feel very anxious. And the question is why? And that Edelman Trust Barometer, trust in media, trust in government, trust in nonprofits, as well as business. United States fell 37 points last year. This is extraordinary dichotomy of things kind of going on that are completely opposed.
Why do you think we feel so stressed, so anxious? I mean, I know your friends and colleagues and mine as well, everybody is on edge. Something is missing. They're worried about something. What's at the heart of that?
So that's a great question. My theory about it is that we live in a connected world. And so there's a number of things that are happening. The same thing that's driving all that progress is that we're connected. And now we're more than ever connected. Everybody's got a mobile phone. Mm-hmm. We can see things and we're informed about things. So, like, I sometimes use this as an example, but Malala, you know, if you were born in 1820, going back to that date that I just referenced, you would have never heard of Malala.
That's
but
right.
Now we do. And it's in your home and it's in your living room. So that's a positive, but it's also creating anxiety. The fact that we're hyper-informed anytime there's a horrible incident, a school shooting, when something bad happens in the Ukraine, a bus gets bombed in Yemen, Syria, an earthquake, a hurricane, natural disaster, they hit our phones.
Instantaneously.
Right away. And so you see that, and you're like left – people are left wondering, what can I do about that? And the other thing, too, is that we've also seen technology, too, because on a somewhat related note – being used in ways that we don't like.
Mm-hmm.
We see it being used to promote hatred, to divide us, and, you know, even to influence elections. We saw what happened in Kenya during the elections, but we also sound familiar. We saw what happened in our election. And then I also think that there's a third thing going on. There's a rapid pace of change. Some people call it the fourth industrial revolution. And things are changing fast, and people are anxious because jobs are getting replaced and displaced, etc.
Yeah. And to your last point, there's a lack of civility. 84% of people said that they've experienced incivility, and the average is about 10.6 times a week. And much of that, as you know, is happening online, whether it be the fake news that you just talked about, or people just feeling safe, I think, behind their computer, that they'll just go right after you if you don't share their opinion. It's a serious issue.
It's a big issue. It's actually something that I think about every day. I think about it in the work that I do. I think about it personally. I think about it in raising children. We need to find a way to align around a common set of values and figure out a way where we can respect differences of opinion. And this country was built as a melting pot.
Mm-hmm.
This country was built on diversity. And we talk about diversity and inclusion in the workplace. We talk about it everywhere we go. Yet, for some reason, we're not tolerating diversity of opinions just about everywhere. I do think that there's a role that businesses, technology, et cetera, can play. And I'm trying to figure out what that role is. I'm trying to learn as I go about how we can restore trust, how we can restore civility.
Well, tell us what you've learned so far, because you are one of the most optimistic people that I've ever run into. And you really do believe that technology can help bridge the divide. Give us a few thoughts you have on that.
Well, I think being an optimist requires discipline, especially in this time. But I very much am, and here's why. I mentioned the fact that we live in this connected world. We all have mobile phones. We all have these devices, and we're connected. The great majority of people, I work with people on all sides of the spectrum, the political spectrum. We're working with nonprofits, social change agents, and there's people. And what I find is that they might sit on the opposite sides of the equation, but they all want to do the right thing and do good. They're not tied to the media narrative where we're being divided. They're trying to figure out ways to connect us and work together across boundaries. So what better way than to use technology, since we're already connected with technology, but to actually allow people to organize, scale, drive, measure, and predict impact with that technology? And the funny thing is contrary to what we might be seeing in the media, when I meet people, these people and leaders on both sides, they genuinely really want to work together. And I think we can take technology and go that last mile and start to connect people up to impact.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people want to go from that news feed where they feel anxious to action.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to be able to take action, and they also want to be able to find common kindred spirits who are willing to go solve those problems.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds to me what you're trying to do is sort of remove some of the friction that exists. Because getting back to my opening, we were talking about Amazon and Netflix and things of that sort. People can do that instantaneously. And I had Josh Wright on the show the other day. He's the executive director of Ideas 42, and his specializes in behavioral science for social good. And he talked about how we have these great intentions. Let's say you're filling out a financial aid form for your child, but then you run into that piece of information that you just don't have. So you put it aside, and you get back to it 6 weeks later after the deadline has passed. I think a lot of that happens in social good. We see something, we want to do something, but it's not as easy as hitting a one click on Amazon. And that is something which you're doing around this philanthropy cloud. Tell us a little bit about how that will work.
Yeah, so the idea came is, it's actually a fairly long story. I'm going to try and keep it brief. But many years ago when I first came into what was then the Salesforce Foundation, I moved over from Salesforce in 2013. We had 60 employees. But there was a really interesting phenomenon going on. People wanted businesses to get more engaged, and we were getting hit on every issue from every angle and asked to get involved. And I didn't want to let people down. I wanted to be able to serve and these people. But they're just, with 60 people, how am I going to be able to respond? But we were a great bridger and connector between a number of different issues. So going back to then figuring out, like, there's got to be a role for technology. I mean, if I can go on Amazon, who sells 540 million unique, distinct products in the United States, and I can find what I'm looking for, there's got to be a way to
and have
it
on your front door in the next day or two.
Right. Exactly. And, if there's 17 sustainable development goals, there's got to be a way to, like, line up around these causes. So if we could put these kind of social issues and go from that news feed, whether it's a natural disaster, whether it's environmental issue, and line people up at an individual level to be able to kind of figure out, go as far as they want to go in impact, whether it's giving money, volunteering time, and matching up volunteering opportunities, or going deeper, actually a layer deeper, to get involved in substantive policy issues. If you could do that for every individual and then track that back to our global progress against the Sustainable Development Goals. Big idea, but it can't be that hard to do.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a customized way. Well, why don't you walk us through the Philanthropy Cloud experience? What do I need to do to set it up? And then what will it provide for me?
So the idea is that, first of all, we are primarily distributing it right now to companies and organizations. Mm-hmm. There's a big movement. Michael Muller, the Director General of the UN, introduced me to the Sustainable Development Goals. And I thought, well, if we can map back every, you know, social issue that's going on to a Sustainable Development Goal or every cause, you know, companies are being pressured to measure their footprint, not only by the global, you know, body that exists, but also by individuals. Millennials have changed the game.
Yeah. Investors.
Investors, too. Yeah. And there's a big movement on that. And so what if we can measure a company's progress against the global goals, that's a good starting point. So and I think so we distribute it back, directly to companies. But there's a big, solid individual use case within that. So if I am a company and I want to have a branded cause that my company cares deeply about, ocean cleanup, let's say, for instance. But I'm an individual who might be second generation Syrian. I might care about the Syrian refugee crisis. You might have a branded site for my company or for the company I work for that's ocean cleanup. But I might be interested in saying, like, OK, I live in Buffalo, New York. I'm a second generation Syrian. I'm interested in the Syrian refugee crisis and what's going on there. I can find what I'm looking for. I can map myself back to volunteer opportunities, giving opportunities, maybe even go more deeply into the substantive issues or the policy making issues. And it starts to intelligently pick up who I am, where I live. The interesting thing for an individual is that if I leave that company and I go to another company, it will take my individual giving record with me.
Oh, that's cool.
But my footprint will be left behind.
Mm-hmm.
So both win in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
So the fastest way to do it that we're doing it right now is we're trying to distribute through corporations first, and then we're going to figure out how to go directly to the individuals.
And as you begin to fill out this profile and decide what you're interested in and get these news feeds, you have something called Einstein. Tell us about Einstein.
Well, that, I inferred this a little bit, but Einstein will pick up, you know, your interest areas, your demographics, you know, based on, let's say, for instance, I use that example, Buffalo, New York. It'll pick up and say, okay, here is what you are interested in. Here's what generally captures your attention. It'll see what you're watching in terms of what you click on, etc., and it'll start to intelligently match you to things that might be most relevant to you based on your geography, based on your interest areas. And so that rather than, as I said, if you were shopping on Amazon, 540 million unique distinct products, you can find what you're looking for. Well, that experience should be exactly the same way when you're going after philanthropy. You don't have time to sort through every single cause and issue and then all the organizations around it. So it's trying to intelligently map back the most relevant opportunities to you.
Yeah, sort of one-stop shopping. So
the
way it is right now, if I read an article I care about it, then I have to go and find an organization that is doing something about it and go on to Google and get to that organization. And when you take all those steps and you can have them all together integrated, it makes all the difference in the world. It does remove the friction.
That's right. And the goal is exactly that, to remove the friction. And you know, I think the thing is that if you go online and you're trying to find something and it takes you more than a few minutes, we are all like very short attention span people. So it's got to be a quick, easy, very simple to use experience for the individual, but also to deploy.
Yeah, I remember the old AOL days when you get the 5 hours and you get the whirly thing going around. We spend all our time waiting. Now we wait a nanosecond, and we've moved on to something else. You talked about that you're distributing this to companies right now.
Yes.
And a key partner of yours from the very outset was the United Way. I mean, their CEO, Brian Gallagher, on the show a couple months ago. Why were they the perfect fit for Salesforce, and what has their contribution been to this effort?
So it's a really funny story. So I initially, when we started looking at this idea about, it's almost 2.5 years ago, I had Brian Gallagher and a number of people out in the office from United Way, and I said, what do you think of this idea? And they're like, we need to. We were talking about working with them as a technology partner just to distribute our software to them. And they're like, well, we should work on this together. And so then Brian and I started working really closely. We talked to Mark Benioff. The other thing, too, is that we are a public benefit corp, but we're a nonprofit. So I can't go raise money to go build such an amazing platform from the outside world. So dawned on us, like, we're the world's number one CRM vendor. United Way has over 100 years, basically corporate giving experience. Why not take what you do best, United Way? Why not take what we do best and let's co-invest and let's make this thing really
work? Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, Rob. You know, there are a lot of people out there who really care and want to help others. They can have a difficult time finding a cause that they feel really passionate about. Philanthropy Cloud help in this regard?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
There's a number. You can search by causes. You can you can sift through content. You can search by causes. It's very much the best way I would put it is it is very much like going on to Amazon and shopping. And we want to have an engaged experience, one that you kind of look at different issues and study issues and start to learn about the issues, have rich content that really attracts you so you can browse through it. You don't have to always have the end result be that you're going to give money or find a volunteering opportunity, or more about how do I study an issue and how do I find interesting content that informs me of these issues out of this divisive narrative that we have today that is really trying to take you down a path of understanding the issue in a highly objective way. And what that'll do is that'll start to pull in people and it'll start to give people hope. Because I think right now the current media narrative, I feel anxious too, because the media narrative is highly divided because that's what sells.
That's right.
And the thing is that is pulling a lot of people away. That's creating a lot of anxiety, a lot of hopelessness. And that's why that dichotomy that we talked about in the beginning, why I feel optimistic, because the stats are showing that it's amazing. When you go from 94% of the world's population being in extreme poverty to 8%, the challenge is we're not reflecting on that progress we've made. We're hyper-focused on the 8%. So then that's a great thing, though, to be hyper-focused on the 8%. But let's not make that a negative thing. Let's ask ourselves, how do we supercharge that and take capacity of people who want to be engaged, want to understand the issues, make it interesting so that they actually engage and we can go fix that 8%. And they feel hopeful, not hopeless again.
Yeah. And you're not being a Pollyanna here. What does is it
Maybe.
Puts things in context, though. I mean, we've lost context. We never look at the course of human history. We're just looking at the moment and what we're being fed. Now, Rob, Philanthropy Cloud integrates into two of your other platforms. One of those is Nonprofit Cloud, and the other is Education Cloud. Tell us about those.
Yeah, so one of the extraordinary things about being the number one CRM vendor, connected to the number one CRM vendor in the world, and the fact that we live in this connected world, is given us an extraordinary opportunity to actually connect those two up, drive incredible impact. I would argue our greatest area of impact is through technology.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea behind the Nonprofit Cloud, which we launched this year, is that because everybody's connected, nonprofits can connect with their constituents, their donors, advocates in ways we never previously imagined, which will drive impact. It will measure impact in ways that we could have never also imagined. And so when you think about that, whether you have 8 people in your organization or 8,000 people in your organization, you can connect up with hundreds of millions of people. Mm-hmm. In the old days, it was direct mail. It was very manual. It was you couldn't scale. You can now scale, regardless of the number of people, in ways that are going to change the world and drive more impact. The same thing is true on a little bit different note is also with education. Imagine from the time you are recruited, let's say in higher ed, recruited as a student, to the time you are a student, and what was your student experience like? And then all the way to where you're an alumni, where you are changing the outcomes of education. I'm managing my education over my mobile phone. Not only can I schedule an appointment with an advisor, I might be able to join an intramural group. I might get content published to me in highly personalized ways. You know, let's say I was a poli-sci major. Somebody's coming in, a former Speaker of the House is coming in onto campus. Let's target them. Let's create a rich experience for them.
Mm-hmm.
What ends up happening is I end up becoming really connected to my institution. If you're the institution on the other side, you start to have an entire student body, an alumni body connected up to the institution as well. And you can start to measure working, what's not working. Why are people dropping off between freshman and sophomore year?
Mm-hmm.
With people in these majors that aren't successful, what majors did they, and there's universities doing that, majors did they, you know, transfer to the, where they had a better come on their career? And what happened to the poli-sci majors? Did they become lawyers? Do they become business people? And these become really interesting statistics that will inform us on working, what's not working in education.
Yeah, that's all very interesting. And, you know, sometimes I think about giving, and it so often is a solitary act, as you were talking to about before, direct mail. You're in your home, you just send a check. But it sounds, the way you speak here, Rob, is that Philanthropy Cloud has a way of connecting you to making you part of something much larger, and then seeing what that much larger is accomplishing. And that just absolutely changes your perspective about yourself and about the world and about the issue you're trying to solve.
You know, it's a really interesting point that you just hit the hammer on the nail, because I think the thing is that when you look at giving, it is a very personal thing, but we also want to be connected up to a common, our common humanity. And the fact that you can start to see, like, what personal impact am I making towards this goal?
Mm-hmm.
How does it roll up to the sustainable development goals? And how are we making progress progress is humanity. It starts to kind of, it will connect us all. It will make us feel like we're all part of something bigger.
Solving something. I mean, when I get a mail, let's say, to help the famine in sub-Saharan Africa, you know, I send in $50. What difference does that make? I mean,
right.
Millions of people. But when I see I'm part of this incredible cohort of millions, collectively we're doing this, I say, we can actually solve this.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you said earlier, I don't want to sound Pollyanna here, but I really fundamentally do believe this. And I believe it's needed now more than ever,
mm-hmm.
because I do think that we need to restore hope. We need to restore trust, and we need to restore, the focus on what we have in common. Everything that we're talking about today is like, why are we different and how we're different and why our differences are either right or wrong. And like, if we can start to line up around a common enemy, which is whether it's an environmental concern or a common enemy, which is a disaster, or line up, then we can start to stop being common enemies amongst ourselves and then focus on things that are going to help humanity for generations.
Definite game changer. Let's discuss your giving a little bit. And two of the areas that you have particularly invested in are education and mm-hmm. workforce development. Why those two, Rob?
Well, I mentioned it in the beginning, but it starts with, first of all, we started with when 2013, our grants budget was $8 million.
Mm-hmm.
This year it's going to be $50 million. My goal is to get up to $100 million on an annual basis. The thing is that, that may be a lot of money, but you can't solve every problem in the world with that. So it's about focus. And when we realized what area can we influence the most with focus and with those dollars, it was education and workforce development. Because as a tech company, there's a thing that's going on right now. I referenced it earlier, the fourth industrial revolution. And there's a great risk that large groups of people get left behind as industries shift. There's a lot of anxiety about it. I actually think there's more anxiety than will pan out into reality.
Mm-hmm.
Because when the loom was created, everybody in the textile industry was mortified, thinking that, like, oh, textile industry is dead. But here we are, several hundred years later, and textile industry is alive and well. It's just industries are shifting, and new jobs, meaningful jobs, are being created. Guess where the biggest shortages are with the most meaningful jobs? In the tech industry.
Yeah.
750,000 jobs in the UK by 2020, a shortage.
Hmm.
High-paying jobs. Meanwhile, other industries are getting phased out. We have similar stats here in the United States. So let's invest in education because, one, it will ensure that people have hope, that we have a diverse, a talented, and empowered, skilled workforce that's prepared for the skill with the skills they need for the 20th century. 21st century. Sorry, wrong century. I'm old. The thing is that let's make sure that they're prepared for that. And I think tech companies have a role in also helping universities and other organizations or some of these workforce development organizations readapt their curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing organization out here and by the way, in New York is doing just this. Coalition for Queens.
Yeah, they're fantastic. Back in September, you held 4 days of inspiration and giving back out in the Bay Area. It was called Dreamforce 18. Tell us about it. Tell us what goes on there.
Well, so Dreamforce is the largest technology conference in the world, and it is a mix. What's beautiful about Marc Benioff, and this is why I've stated
that is your CEO.
He is
of Salesforce.
CEO of Salesforce.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is amazing about Marc Benioff is he exposes people not only to the world's leading technology, but also thought leaders, and as well as nonprofits, businesses. And it's literally like a connection point. And I think until you actually go to it, to a number of CEOs who were just blown away by the opportunities that presented there, you have well over 100,000 people there, all connected and looking at the possibilities of technology, but also the possibilities of collaboration and giving back to your kind of multi-sector question. These things all converge and you have thought leaders there. You'll have ex-world leaders there. You'll have nonprofit leaders there speaking. You'll have business leaders speaking. You'll have thought leaders, futurists, and I think it's really an incredible conference to talk about what is. I would say it's as much a technology conference as it is like almost a mini Davos as well.
Yeah, sure.
More of a grassroots Davos where people are trying to align around common messages, figure out how we work together and how we can use technology to work together. It's amazing.
And Dreamforce 19 is already in the works. It's going to be in November next year.
November.
Mm-hmm. Let me close with this, Rob. If you look ahead, let's say 5 years, in addition to what the philanthropy cloud can do, let's see an ease for the individual and for the company, how do you believe it will impact the sector at large? The total amount of money raised, the way we go about solving our problems, that nature.
I would hate to put a number on it, but here's what I would like to see.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see over 1 billion people on this, at least within the next 5 years. And that way but I would hate to put a number in terms of how much we would raise and by each specific SDG, but 1 billion users, that's what I want in the next 5 years. But I also want it to help change the psychology of the world today from one of anxiety to one that actually can get engaged constructively and feel engaged and not watching or all of this kind of chaos and angst that's going on right now. They feel like there's a platform, something that takes them into constructive engagement. There's more needed than just the philanthropy cloud to do this, but I hope that it does its part in helping make the world a better place.
Well, that is aspirational and audacious, and we need it just about now. Well, Rob Acker, the Chief Executive Officer of Salesforce.org, I want to thank you so much for being here this evening. Where can people learn more about Philanthropy Cloud, Education Cloud, Nonprofit Cloud, and all the other things that you do?
www.salesforce.org.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, Rob. It was a real pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Denver.
I'll be back with more of The Business of Giving right after this.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.